So, as we were continuing from yesterday, I think we're at the page 3. So, the point was, is the pratigya of this section was about how, because of being absorbed in the Lord's transcendental pastimes, then Maharaj Parikha was fearless. Right? He was not afraid of losing anything, because of his detachment, and he therefore had the knowledge by which he could cross over this material ocean. Right? From knowledge is the active principle. Not for what one's trying to do, because on the spiritual platform, it's the mind that's important. Right? And in relationships, in other words, in rasa relationship, the mind is important, because the mind is what it's attracted to, and what it has the need for. Interaction and what experiences the interaction. Right? Does that make sense? But that's great as long as that attachment and need is Krishna. Does that make sense? So now, if it's not, then the easiest thing is just transfer it. That's the first thing. Okay, if your attachments aren't Krishna, make it Krishna. Why make it anything else? He's the most beautiful, most wonderful anyway, so then, why not? Right? Does that make sense? Then it just works. If you can't do that, then you use intelligence. Right? Because Pancharatrik system is given by Narad Muni. And his whole thrust is Naishkarmya. And we see that that's basically the Vedas, when they're talking about the material world, the interaction with is Naishkarmya, which means that you're dealing with it through intelligence, performing duties with intelligence. Does that make sense? So then the switch comes, the intelligence becomes the central point. Right? But the purpose of it being the central point is the mind. Does that make sense? Right? Because the intelligence, then the intelligence, it's from intelligence that you create your ego. Right? Because ego means I am. So that means you've distinguished between what I am and what I'm not. So it takes intelligence. But the mind's accepted it. Right? And by the intelligence, then you can adjust the mind. Does that make sense? Because the mind is it's doing what it does. It's attached to things. It desires things. That's what it's supposed to do. That's where rasa comes from. But it should be connected to Krishna. Does this make sense? So then, the intelligence is used to create, by that knowledge creates detachment. Detachment from what? Not Krishna. That's what the Mayavadis do. They apply it, you know, unleashed. You know, it's just like a Brahmastra. You know, you can blow up everything. You can just only strike a particular target. Right? So when it's properly utilized, it's only a particular. So it's only to adjust the mind. Right? It's not to also get rid of a relationship, of rasa. It's to adjust the rasa that the mind is attached to, that it becomes pure and transcendental. Does that make sense? Therefore, knowledge is emphasized. And from the knowledge comes detachment. But the detachment is supposed to be not from interaction with devotees and the Lord. It's supposed to become detached from material interaction, material need, material desire. Does that make sense? So it's supposed to be used exactly just to cut out the material concept, but leave intact fully the proper, healthy form of rasa. Right? Does that make sense? The Mayavads, they just cut out everything, you know? Because it's actually coming from their mind, as are the mental speculators, is that they have a problem with material relationships, therefore all relationships are bad. They're smart enough to understand that it's not this woman or that child or this money or that job or this situation. It's all. The experience of being with women is the same. The experience of money, whether you have one paisa or you have crores, it doesn't matter. It's the same. Whatever you're dealing with, it's the same. So therefore, then the tendency is drop it all. But in dropping it all, they drop the relationships that are in it, because the relationships in that give them pain. But the problem's not the relationships, the problem's the attachment to material things and result. Does this make some sense? Okay. So in other words, by his being absorbed in hearing about the Lord, then one, he gains, there's knowledge. Knowledge comes, so the intelligence becomes developed, so then we become detached from the material energy. Right? So knowledge and detachment come automatically. But more important is that you become detached from material energy, you have to be going somewhere. You have to repose that sentiment somewhere. So that's on the Lord. So by hearing about the Lord, then you're attracted to the Lord. Automatically, you get the knowledge of how the material world works and the detachment from it. Does that make sense? So that's the point. That's the particular. Does that make sense there? Is that, any questions on this? Or yes?
Sometimes I've heard that intelligence is higher than the mind, but how you've just said it, it's like the mind is higher than intelligence because the mind is like still spontaneous detachment, and then the intelligence comes in after.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, let us do like this. The intelligence is higher than the mind in that it's a subtler principle. And the intelligence is the closest thing to the supersoul, because this is how you're going to get at the supersoul through the intelligence. Right? But that's how you're going to get to the supersoul. But you want to get from the supersoul to Bhagavan. That's the mind. Right? This other, like, the other thing is like this. Okay, you have a husband and wife. Okay, who's superior? No idea. That was the problem. Okay. Okay, shall we try this again? We'll forget all that. We'll ask the question again. Who's superior, husband or wife? Okay. But who creates all, who makes the house and the whole household life worth living? Yeah. So you understand? But the problem is if the wife is not absorbed in the house, it's outside the house, it's a problem. Right? Because the house won't work. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it has to be controlled by the intelligence and brought so it's in the house.
So the husband's like the intelligence and the wife is like the
house. Yeah, exactly. You understand this, you'll understand how to make all relationships work. The feminine nature is mind, the masculine nature is intelligence. Right? Krishna is Sat. He's the masculine principle. That's the male. Radharani is Ananda. That's the experience. That's the mind. Right? So their combination, that's Abhideya. That's activity. Right? Does that make sense? That's why we always use this male-female principle. Sometimes we think we're just into social things. No, because all there is Radha and Krishna. So it's Radha and Krishna meeting. That's activity. So any activity, it all is functioning because of a masculine and feminine principle. So the intelligence is the masculine, the mind is the feminine. So the feminine must be controlled by the masculine. If it's not, the feminine is not happy. Mind is not happy. Because the mind comes out of goodness, therefore it likes things that are set. You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty is that it likes it set. In other words, boundaries are there. Right? Does that make sense? So within that boundaries, once it's set, then the mind can go wherever it likes. That's what makes the whole interaction nice. Unfortunately, most people don't use this thing of a fence or like a corral. They like to use a leash. Leash means, you know, you can't go anywhere. And it's not clear where the boundaries are. On a leash, there are no boundaries. You're controlled where you're going, but you drag whoever's on the other end of the leash all over the place. You want to go to the other side of the street, you can go. But you'll be, you know, within 5 feet of who's on the other end of the leash. Does that make sense? So therefore, for the female to create its need of a variety and independence will drag the man away from any standards. Right? But if a corral is set, then there's lots of space to move, because sometimes you sit in this corner, sometimes that, sometimes in the middle, so you can get all the variety you want. But it's very clear where the boundaries are, so it's as big as the boundaries are. then the woman's free to move within that. Does that make sense? So these are fundamental things. You don't understand it. There's no chance anyone's ever going to make any social interactions work. That's all. It can't. Because it's going against the religion of the masculine and feminine principle. It's fixed. No matter what anybody's opinion is, it's the way it is. You know? I mean, it's like, how do you know they're a woman? There's certain physical features, you know they're a woman. How do you know they're a man? There's certain physical features. It's just the way it is. All women of the world have the same complaints about the men. All men of the world have the same complaints about the women. All women of the world appreciate about them. You know what I'm saying? It's the same. It's exact. So if it's understood, then we apply this to get out of here. It's philosophy. Right? You could take it as it's just social functioning. But that social functioning is the area where we get our rasa. But you have to take that according to Krishna's principles, engage that, and then use the intelligence to get out. Right? Because it is nice. A husband is nice. There's something about it. Women like husbands. There's something there. There's a steadiness. There's something there. There's a stability and all that. It's nice. Like flagpoles. Because they're fixed. They don't like them because they move. If the flagpole moves, the flag has no meaning. Because the flagpole is fixed, therefore, that's the contrast. Male-female is a contrast. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what's like. So then, but ultimately, the husband's going to die. He's going to go away. It's going to change. So that principle of husband, that's real. But it's Krishna. He's the actual husband. You understand? He is fixed. He doesn't go anywhere. Right? It's not that it keeps changing and that, no, he's stable, steady. He's always there. You can depend upon him. He's sitting there in your heart no matter what you're doing. He's always there. It's not that he goes on a coffee break or something like that. You know, you know what I'm saying? He's always there. Whenever you turn, he's there. Right? It's not that we come to the temple sometimes and that, you know, and the door's closed and says, oh, hey, you know, it should be open for darshan. Oh, sorry, the deities just decided to go for a walk. They're not here, you know. We don't know. You know. They'll be back sometime. We heard today, but, you know, last time they didn't come back for 3 weeks. But, you know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's just, he's steady. He's always there. So that's what it is. You know what I'm saying? Same thing, is there's something nice about the females, that they're there, they create the variety, they create all these different things, all the intensity, fullness of emotion is there. But it's always changing, and like we said, it's temporary, it's going to go away. But the Lord's devotees are always there. So they are the feminine nature. They're always there. We can take shelter of them. We can get that energy, that need. So between the Lord and his devotees, whatever we need, we can get. But until we have that complete understanding of knowledge, so therefore that complete detachment, therefore we deal with it in its reflection here. But with this purpose of knowing that ultimately it's all coming from Krishna. Does that make some sense? Okay. So then the intelligence then controls the mind. But on the platform of rasa, then the mind controls the intelligence, right? If there's trust between man and woman, then who controls who? You know what I'm saying? For setting standards, you know, for when you're dealing with philosophy and intelligence, and the man sets the thing. But when it comes to the rasa, the woman controls the house, right? So the man naturally comes under that control because of rasa, because of trust, because of, no? Yes, no? So that's the whole point, is that once rasa is properly established, connection with Krishna, then the intelligence works under the mind. Or in its perverted reflection, once one is committed to the material energy, then the intelligence is under the mind. What the mind wants, the intelligence gets. Does that make sense? So that's the... So then, Nivesha, 1b, page 3. Refer the terms nityam and abhikshanam back to the instruction of Bhagavatam 113, quoted in Part Fro of Anucheda 250. Whether one is a liberated soul or conditioned soul, he should daily drink the rasa of Srimad Bhagavatam. Since everyone, Baddha or Mukta, is urged to regularly hear the Bhagavatam, it is only reasonable that rasa appears in the narratives at different levels to attach different grades of souls to Sri Krishna. Okay. In all Bhagavatam narratives, there is rasa. But just as there is a variety of rasas, so in the narratives of Bhagavatam, there are varieties, various tastes of sweetness that nurture rasa amongst various levels of listeners. As Sridhar Swami indicates above, the qualities of saintly kings are narrated in the Bhagavatam to help a listener be situated in vairagya, renunciation. Maharaj Pariksit is a Mahabhagavata. His qualities, like Krishna's, are relishable. Hearing about Pariksit, as we are about to do in this chapter, can satisfy the senses of a receptive, though conditioned listener. The rasa and rich qualities of King Pariksit bless the listeners with the determination to give up engagements of selfish pleasure and instead use the senses and their objects for the pleasure of Krishna. This does not contradict the fact that on the whole, the Bhagavatam is a narration of Sri Krishna's qualities. Of those qualities, his mercy is one of the most wonderful. Krishna's mercy is spread throughout the world by his devotees who chant his holy name. This increases the attachment of everyone to him. As we shall see below, Srila Jiva Goswami makes this very point in Part 5 of Anucheda 250 of Bhaktisandarbha. Thus, topics about great devotees like Maharaj Pariksit, glorified in this Chapter 18 of Srimad Bhagavatam, are inseparable from the mercy of the Lord. In other words, if there's mercy, there's interaction. Right? There has to be interaction if there's mercy.
So, can I have another book? Mine's messed up. I've got page 14 now.
Does that make sense? It means if there's mercy, then there's interaction. Does this make sense? There's this very, very, very subtle point. This is the reason that the Vedas became personified Vedas, surrendered to Krishna's gopis. Because the essential quality of the Vedic literature is mercy. Right? Because that's where rasa happens. Krishna is the independent Lord. The devotees are attached. The energy is attached to the energetic. So the energetic is actually independent. He is Atmaroma. He can function without the energy, interacting with it, because the energy is him. Right? So he can just be on the platform, it's me, and be Atmarama. But the energy only functions in its connection with the Lord. Does this make sense? So, therefore, it's Krishna's mercy that he interacts with the energy that has the need to interact. You know what I'm saying? As soon as it's separated, it's conscious of its existence. Therefore, its existence depends on Krishna. It's his mercy that instead of being Aparama, he interacts, right? That's what the gopis were complaining. You know, that there's something, Atmaramas, and they don't care. So are you like that? We hear your Atmarama. Is that why you walked off and left us here? Does that make sense? I hope this is not too many things all at once.
So that means in proper relationship, one person should be Atmarama?
No, it means it means the masculine principle is Atmarama, but it interacts with the feminine principle according to the nature and the of the feminine principle. Right? The masculine principle takes part in the female world, but according to, by being sensitive to it. Right? That's Ashray and Vishay. Krishna is the Vishay. He's the enjoyer. The ashray is the one, is the enjoyed. But ashray means according to the nature of the ashray, that's how Krishna interacts. Krishna is the enjoyer, the devotees are enjoyed. But it's not just general. Mother Yashoda has a need to interact with Krishna as a mother. Therefore, he interacts as a son. It's not that I'm the man, therefore I'm that. That's why this whole concept, this masculine, machissimo male, absolutely is a complete failure. It's just a feminine nature that's taken to its extreme of false ego. It's not masculine at all, sorry to say, to three-quarters of the world's population, but it absolutely has nothing to do with masculinity. Right? Because masculine means it's either independent, which a machissimo's not, because he's tough, because the girls are looking at him. Right? So he's not independent. And because he is independent, what's wrong with being submissive to the ladies and fulfilling their needs? Because there is in no way your masculine identity is compromised. But because they're not male, therefore, to prove they're male, they have to lord it over the females to prove that they're males. But their masculinity depends on the feminine. But masculinity doesn't depend upon feminine. It's independent. So this is why, psychologically, relations all over the world are failing. Because these simple principles of God consciousness aren't understood and are not applied in their life from top to bottom. In other words, from top, from the gopis, right down to the lowest level of Dharma Artha Kama. Yeah, the same principles have to be applied. It's not different. Because it's only Krishna. It's all Krishna. It's all Krishna. So why will it act different than Krishna? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that once we understand who we are, it's by Krishna's mercy he interacts with us. Right? So that's the whole point. Because of mercy, then everything happens. Right? So that's the whole point. The feminine need in the context is the most intense. It's more than parental, it's more than friendship like that. So that need being fulfilled, because it's so intense, that is kindness. Right? But it's not proud. Krishna's not proud. If you accept the relationship, you act in it. You want to be proud, you stay separate from it. Right? If you want to be proud, don't deal with energy. If you don't want to be proud, you can deal with energy. Very, very important. You can't have both. You know? It's like the jackal, the blue jackal sitting on the throne, you know, or the dog sitting on the throne. He wants to be the king, but if you throw a bone, he wants to go down and get it. You can't be both. It's just, you have to accept that. God, because he's the source of everything, he can be both. But we're energy, so that's it. We can't be both. Just by chemistry, it's just the way it is. But we just don't want to accept that. By somehow or another, I will somehow or another be God and still act like an idiot, you know, untrained, you know, female, you know. But I will get control of everything and make everything work just the way I want it. But you can only control it if you're submissive to what you're controlling. You know what I'm saying? So it's very, very simple, but because it's so different from whatever we've thought up to, you know, coming in contact with this, it doesn't make any sense. Right? You know, it's just like we always thought, this is going to happen. When they say, well, that's happening, you just can't believe it. Even though it's obvious, it's right there, everything's happening. You know, all the people, they love me, this and that. But servant, they're standing out here with placards and throwing bricks. No, it's like that. Canada's a mistake, you know, like that. They must have been sent by, you know, it's obvious. They're out there and they're yelling and screaming. But you can't, because it's just against what you've, your concept. Does this make sense? Yes? No? Okay. So you'll see this underlying theme is going to be everywhere in Bhagavatam. It's there on the whole Vedic literatures. But what's being given here is what he's saying is all these pastimes are being given. Now that we understand this masculine feminine principle, then all rasas are appreciated. Someone on the lower rasa wants to hear their rasa. Other higher rasas may or may not make sense to them. But someone on a higher rasa can always appreciate a lower rasa. Right? Just like this. The mother, she has her child. Right? She has a parental relationship with the child. But now if, let's say, the teacher, or let's say someone else just comes and just appreciates the qualities of the child. Oh, he's so nice. He's very, peaceful and submissive and intelligent and has a good service attitude. Does the mother, doesn't want to hear about it because it's not like, her feeding and dressing the child? You understand? No, she's happy to hear that because it's already included. Because of those qualities, therefore, then she's serving the child. She's friendly and well-wisher of the child. She's, taking care of the child. Does that make sense? Therefore, you can tell about the kings and this and that and the qualities that are there between the devotees and the Lord will be appreciated by anyone at that level and anyone above. Below we'll see it, but just as another quality of appreciation. Oh, Krishna does these nice dances with the gopis. They're very sweet. But it's just appreciation. You know what I'm saying? But still. So all grades of devotees, even your giving Lord, just like this. Okay, let us say you have a group of parents, right? Mature parents. They have children. They've been through it all. And they're sitting and talking. What will be the level of their conversation? Right? It'll be on their level. Let us say that one of their children walks into the room. What will be the conversation? On their level? Or at a level of the child. You understand? They have no problem with it. They can discuss on that level. They use hidden language and this and that and say everything they want to say. But at the same time, the child's involved or the child doesn't know, child compliant. You know what I'm saying? So like that, does that make some sense? So at the same time as those on higher level, they can appreciate anything lower and can function on that because they're already included in the higher rasa. Shanta rasa is already included in any other rasa. So if you just talk about kings and their greatness and this and that, it's already anybody else can appreciate. Does that make some sense? Okay, and then he gives the Bhaktisandarbha. Here the word guna, qualities, means mercy and other virtues. So notice here he says mercy and other virtues. So he's going to, you'll always see when it's giving a list of qualities, mercy, at least when you're talking about this level on the Vedas, mercy is always mentioned. Mercy, this, that, this, that. But here you see just mercy is mentioned and other qualities. Does that make sense? Like that, because it's Krishna's kindness to interact. From that interaction comes all of the qualities. Does that make sense? Okay. O Master of the senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name, and thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings offer you their respectful homage, the demons are afraid, and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done. So that was from the Bhaktisandarbha. Okay, any other questions on this? Specifically just the point? Means this point will come up again and again, so if it's basically you understand it, but 5 minutes later you forget it, but it'll keep coming up.
It's obviously in the list of different good qualities, you can see that some qualities belong to female nature, some to male nature. So this quality looks like karmika, means like female.
This quality, is it female? It is female, but it's the masculine interacting with the female. In other words, dependent. Mercy is you're showing kindness to somebody in some way dependent. Like Parikit Maharaj is showing mercy to Kali because he's surrendered. So in that case, then he's the masculine principle, Kali is the feminine principle. Does that make sense? So these things are there. They all, yeah. Okay. Okay, vritti. Commentary on the Pratigya regarding the comparison of the Vedic scriptures to Srimad Bhagavatam. Verse 4 of the Pratigya remarks that the Vedic hymns sing the glories of the Lord. Okay. Okay. Those who have dedicated their lives to the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead, of whom the Vedic hymns sing, and who are constantly engaged in remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, do not run the risk of having misconceptions even at the last moments of their lives. Because misconceptions go right up through bhava. Right, that. Because in bhava, then you have five stages. That the third stage is smarana dasa. So it's smarana dasa, then one is fully absorbed in the Lord. But you only can get to samadhi and cross from samadhi into, what's the next one? Sampatti? No, sampatti is the last one, isn't it? Apandas. Apanadas, you can only cross if you don't think I'm a great devotee or I am a guru of Vaishnavas. Right? Because I am a guru of Vaishnavas, then Krishna's the Adi Guru. Right? So then you're thinking technically, very subtly, you're Krishna. Or I am the great devotee, I am advanced, then you're the devotee. But Krishna is actually the guru, we're just a representative, and that comes down through his devotees. And the devotees, they're actually the devotees, we're not the devotees, we're the servant of the devotees. That's the thing. We say we're devotees, but technically that means we're devotees of devotees. We're never devotees. We're the devotees of the devotees. The devotees are already set. Those are the internal potency that are expanded from the Lord in their direct expansions. So the devotees are all internal potency. We're devotees of devotees. We're the tathasta shakti. Does that make sense? But instead of just saying devotees of devotees, we just say devotees. Because devotees, but you're devoted to something. But who we're devoted to is the devotees of the Lord. Does that make sense? Even more technical, the devotees who are the devotees of the devotees of the Lord, like that. Does that make sense? It's just my definition of what you say devotee, what you're devoted to. Is that okay? Does that make sense? And here it says, of whom the Vedic hymns sing. That's important. All Vedic hymns are actually glorifying the Lord. But it's just how much they address what particular audience they're addressing. Does that make sense? The more materialistically absorbed or covered the living entity, then because material and all these manifestations of the universal form is still Krishna, it becomes discussed through that level. You know what I'm saying? So it becomes covered so much that those on that level think it's their topic, those on a higher level can understand it's still their topic. But it appears that it's covered. You know what I'm saying? But it's still in glorification of the Lord. Does that make sense? Yes, no?
Yes.
Okay. But, as Srila Jiva Goswami points out in Tattva Sandarbha, 26.3, the fact that the Vedas hymns glorified Krishna before Sukadev spoke the Bhagavad Purana to Maharaj Parikit in no way obliges devotees to seek support for the Bhagavatam in Vedic texts. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the Vedic texts, you don't have to. The Bhagavatam is. In other words, the Vedas glorifying the Lord, that actually is the Bhagavatam. And expanding from that, then that is. That becomes the Vedic literatures. It's actually the other way around. Does that make sense? Like that. The Bhagavatam... Okay, here's a quote. The Bhagavatam is Krishna's very own representative, as stated in the first skanda. Quote, now that Krishna has returned to his abode along with dharma and knowledge, etc., this Purana has risen like the sun for the benefit of sight in the Kali Yuga. Bhagavatam 1, 3, 43, and 44. The Bhagavat is thus seen to be endowed with all virtues, as demonstrated in the verse. The supreme dharma, devoid of all ulterior motive, is found in this Bhagavata. 1.1.2. This fact is further demonstrated by the mukta phala. The Vedas, Puranas, and Kavya give counsel like a ruler, a friend, and a beloved. But the Bhagavat is said to give counsel like all three combined. Thus, even as some consider other Puranas to be dependent on the Vedas, the same supposition with regard to the Bhagavata is dispelled by the Bhagavat itself. This is also self-evident. Therefore, the Bhagavat represents the highest form of Shruti. As it is said, Bhagavatam 147, this verse is counted as item 3 of question 7 in the study guide for chapter 4 of this canto. Right, because it's out of the fourth canto. Katam hapan daveyasya rajarsher munina saha samvara samabhut tata yataisha satvati shruti. How did it happen that King Parikit Maharaj, the wise descendant of the Pandavas, met the Muni Sukadeva Goswami who taught him the satvata shruti? Does that make sense? So, in other words, now the point he's bringing out is the Bhagavatam is in no way dependent upon the Vedic literatures, just like bhakti is not dependent on karma and jnana. You could say, you could argue that, no, but all the activities I perform in devotional service are action, so that's karma, and I'm using my intelligence, that's jnana, so only because of that I'm able to perform my bhakti. So bhakti is dependent on karma and jnana. Does that make sense? But the point is that bhakti is separate from it. From bhakti is coming the karma and jnana. So the whole jnana literatures and the karma literatures are simply taking the aspect of bhakti that deals with activity and seemingly separating it from devotional service, presents it on its own. Right? In other words, activity gets result. It means the activity you perform a devotional activity, the result is Krishna's pleasure. But, so you take that principle of performing an activity to get a result, right? And don't apply it to Krishna, that's karmakanda. Because Krishna is tattva. Right? He is knowledge. So everything that exists is Him. So all aspects of that understanding are Him. Therefore, He is that knowledge. But you take the principle of, by analyzing something, I can understand its components and their similarities. And there, in this way, then I can understand the situation of something. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So then that I can also take that principle and separate Krishna from that and just analyze things for whatever purpose I want. That's jnanakanda. Does this make sense? Yeah. So it actually it's dependent on bhakti, because bhakti means a performance of activity, engaging the sense, body, mind, and words in the Lord's service. That's bhakti. Right? So it's free from karma and jnana. But activity is there and knowledge is there. So therefore that means jnana actually, what it means here is it's coming from. So when it says Krishna walks but he does not walk, means he's walking, but he's not walking like we're walking. It's not because of air, you know, the mind pushing on the air pushes on the fire pushes on the muscles, and the muscles move. No, Krishna's independent. What he likes happens. So his movement isn't our movement, but he does move. This makes sense? You know, it's kind of like opening our eyes under the water and trying to figure everything out. You know? You know? Does this make some sense? Did we lose anyone here? Everyone's with us? Yes? No? Yeah? Okay, so then, continuing here with Nimesha 2. The two words that close this verse are most significant. Satvati means transcendental. Shruti, that which is to be heard, is a term reserved for Vedic texts. Srila Prabhupada here translates Shruti as essence of the Vedas. Right? That's why it's so, probably the word for words are important, because there's a variety of meanings, and by these seemingly contradictory meanings, you actually, if you can bring all those contradictory meanings together in one place, you have the actual understanding of the principle of the word. Does that make sense? Because it can be applied in so many ways. So that's why it's very nice to know this variety. And also, for poetics, it's also nicer to give a variety. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, it's always the same. In Srimad Bhagavata Tatparya 4, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur provides an elaborate explanation of the term Satvati and why Srimad Bhagavatam is the original Vedic Samhita, or Shruti. So here's the quote from there. In ancient times, there was only one community of men known as Hamsa. The best amongst these were known as Paramahamsas, right? Hamsa means that you're transcendental, right? Paramahamsa means you're out of the material world. In other words, if you're liberated, you're a Hamsa. If you're into the spiritual world, you're Paramahamsa. We understand the difference? Therefore, the Hamsas and Paramahamsas can relate on the transcendental platform. Though Hamsa has not realized their fully, you know, I would say it's not come to the platform of prema. That's a Paramahamsa. Hamsa has not. But the Hamsas will be those who are endeavoring to come to that, those who are on Baba, or in other words, Brahma-Bhuta. And those who are impersonalists, who are on the platform of liberation or mukti. Right? Does that make sense? If you're liberated and you're God-conscious, that's called Baba, or Brahma-Bhuta. Right? If you're liberated but not God-conscious, that's called mukti. Right? That makes sense. But they're both transcendental. Or, the best amongst these were known as Paramahamsas, or travelers on the path of spiritual life. Previously, Vaishnavas were referred to as Paramahamsa. When we study the ancient history of the Bhagavat Sampradaya, we come to know about these Mahamsa and Paramahamsas. They followed a process that was known as Ekayana. Because Srimad Bhagavatam was the subject matter for discussion of Paramahamsas, it is also known as Paramahamsa Samhita. Samhita refers to a compiled literature, the accumulation of knowledge from the five different sources found among the followers of Ekayana is called Pancharatra. Pushkara, Hayashirsha, and Narada Pancharatras are in this category. A worshipper of the, Pancharatra is also known as Agama, means that which comes from. So then it has sources. So here he's saying five sources. But Ekayana means it's come from the source, but it's only focused on Vishnu. Right? That's Ekayana. If it's dealing with all other so many things, it's not Ekayana, but it's focused just on the Lord. So that means everything that you're dealing with is connected to the Lord. Like you take your bath. You got to take a bath. You stink, right? But people will take it so I don't stink. No. You take the bath because you want to worship the Lord. And when you worship the Lord, you shouldn't stink. Therefore, a bath is in order. Does that make sense? That's Pancharatra. The Vedic is, if the body smells or the breath smells and kind of like social intercourse kind of like stops. Does that make sense? No one wants to deal with you. Therefore, people brush your teeth, take baths. If no one cared, probably no one would make the effort. You know what I'm saying? But here, because you want to please the Lord, therefore it's included in that way. That's Ekayana. Does that make sense? Same activity, but because the perspective is connected to the Lord, then it's Ekayana. If it's not, then it's Vedic. That's the difference between the two. That's why Pancharatra is a transcendental literature. It's Paravidya. It's not counted within... Sometimes we like to count it as kulpa, but it's technically not. It's not ritual. Ritual is included, also connected to the Lord, but it's actually transcendental. It's how to take your philosophy and apply it in the material world. Well, Bhagavad is how it's applied in the spiritual world. You can also do it here if you could fully absorb. But if not, how the Bhagavad can function within your conditioned nature, right? So therefore, ritual is included. Does that make sense? Samhita, okay. The accumulation, okay. A worshipper of the Supreme Lord is known as Bhagavata. I am speaking about the time previous to when Srila Vyasadeva had spoken Srimad Bhagavatam to Sri Sukadeva at Samyaprash. Srimad Bhagavatam was first spoken by Sri Narayana to the great sage Narada. This took place at the village of Kalapagrama in the Himalayas, as recounted by Srila Sukadeva in chapter 87 of 10th canto, verses 4 through 48, means this is the prayers of the personified Vedas. This is a very essential point. In other words, what's going to be established here is the prayers of the personified Vedas are the they are the Satvata Shruti, and the Bhagavatam is the compilation of that. Editorial note, Narad then related it to Vyas, who spoke it to Sukadeva. From that time onwards, it has been known as Srimad Bhagavatam. Before that, it was known as Paramahamsa Sattva Samhita. Right? Does that make sense? From the writings of Srila Vyasadeva, we hear of literature like Paramahamsa Samhita and Sattva Samhita. Vedavyas composed the Puranas to make the understanding of the Vedas easy. The Puranas are full of ancient histories. Srimad Bhagavatam, composed by Srila Vyasadeva, is also one of the Puranas. But it is the only literature that supports the Ekayana system, and so it is also known as Pancharatra. Right? So that makes it, because it's a kind of, because Pancharatra means Ekayana. Right? So therefore, Bhagavatam is a Pancharatra. Bhagavatam is the original Shruti. In other words, Bhagavatam is everything. There are two main branches of the Vedas, the Ekayana, one path branch, and the Bhavayana, many branch path. The Paramahamsa Bhagavatas, who belong to the Achyuta Gota, are counted as members of the Ekayana branch. The sages from the Chuta Gotra are counted as members of the Bhavayana branch. See, there's Chuta and Achyuta. Chuta means fallible. So there's the Achyuta branch, means unfallible branch, that's Ekayana. There's the Chuta that's fallible, that's the Bahavya branch, means those who follow many paths. You know, in other words, demigods or yoga or this or that, so many things. These two branches, Ekayana and Bhavayana, are completely different from each other. In the Ekayana system, the worship of the one Supreme Lord is encouraged. When the understanding of spiritual truth becomes distorted in due course of time, the division of the Vedas and the Varnas come into existence. Before Treta Yuga, there was no division of Varnas. Everyone was in the category of Hamsa. As enviousness towards Vaishnavas gradually became prominent, the Vedas were divided, and the one community of Hamsa became divided into different Varnas headed by the Brahmanas. But because then there's this whole social need becomes more important. Therefore, then there's jealousy, envy of who's higher, who's lower, who's this, who's that. Then you have to bring in the Varnashram system. Like we'll notice when Prabhupada, even within it, it's very interesting that you have the Hamsa system where you don't need like this, but then you bring it in. If you look at it, what did Prabhupada first introduce into the society? Yeah. He introduced the ashram system, which is a spiritual system. It's simply how to engage your body, mind, and words in the Lord's service according to your needs, right? Does that make sense? And the varna that was given was brahminical. But with time, because there was still so much, as we see here, the difficulty between the devotees and focusing and all that and distraction, therefore then Prabhupada started talking about introducing the other three varnas. So then there's an idea that, oh, Prabhupada didn't introduce varnashram, so that means none of the eight aspects, but Prabhupada already introduced five of them. Because that's the actual working principle. But if you can function on that, that's the best. If you can't, then you drop down and add in the others. And then this Daiva Varnashram, then you're connected to the Lord. So then it's still perfect. We're not interested in the Varnashram where it's not connected to this many-branch path. We're not interested in that. We're still only interested in Ekayana. Does that make sense? Let me go back to ancient times. The Hamsa community used to live in that part of present-day Asia that is situated near the Kasyapa Lake, now called the Caspian Sea, in the region of modern-day Iran. Editorial note. Right? At that time, they were known as Aryans. Aryan, Iran, editorial note. Because they were engaged in the worship of demigods, such as the fire god, they considered the worship of Lord Vishnu to be similar to that of the worship of the demigods. Worship of the demigods, along with the offerings of prayers, is found in various scriptures, such as the Vedas and Samhitas. One who wants to properly understand Srimad Bhagavatam should know this. Otherwise, one will certainly consider Srimad Bhagavatam to be just another medieval book. Srimad Bhagavatam is... Okay, so then... Yeah. So Bhagavatam, because it brings in these others, it's not just another book. It's still giving that focus just on the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Srimad Bhagavatam is the only Veda that propounds the Ekayana system. Words like Ekayana, Mahabharata, and Pancharatra are found in the Upanishads. One studies the history of the world before the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam, he will know that human beings were civilized worshippers of the Supreme Lord even before the time of the Rig Veda. People in ancient times were spontaneous devotees of Lord Vishnu, and they remained fixed in the philosophy of Vaishnavism. At the beginning of Treta Yuga, the Ekayana system became obscured, and the Vedas were divided. So, in one sense, you could say that just as there is a concept of that there's the evolution of the soul through the species of life, and because that eternal truth is there, somehow or another a reflection of that was caught by some academic, and he then created the of the species going through, nothing to do with the soul. So in the same way, as there's the principle of that there's the original Veda, the Satvata Shruti. From that, when people weren't qualified to function on that level, then it was divided into the four Vedas. Does that make sense? So then from this, that a perverted reflection of that, then the academics say, okay, here's the Rig Veda age, and this age, and that age, and the Puranic age, and all these funny things. So the principle is there that it was, and then it comes down. Does that make sense? But what's coming down are these elements, because they've been broken, then sometimes you may, it makes it understandable, but you may miss the point of its connection to the Supreme Lord. That's the thing, right? Does that make sense? Like, we'll discuss a very esoteric point, we don't understand it. Then we bring it down to an example that you can relate to. But in the process of doing that, we may get so absorbed in the example, we forget why the example was being given. Understand? So that's what happens in the Vedic literatures. We may make that mistake, because the Satva Shruti is only about the Lord. But if we don't catch that, then we have to bring it into a purview of something that makes sense to us in this world. Therefore, then, the different branches of the Vedic knowledge, they're actually just trying to explain that same process of Ekayana, but through their topic. But in explaining it through the topic, people miss the forest for the trees. Does that make sense?
The Ekayana system is more or less extinct at present. But if a study is carefully made, one will come to the conclusion that before the Vedic age, devotional service to the Lord Vishnu was prominent among the people. Other paths and opinions began to spread only from the beginning of Treta Yuga. It is not that there were Buddhists and Jains in our country long, long ago. In ancient times, there were devoted Brahmanas that were only interested in the topics of devotional service to Lord Vishnu. Descendants of these Brahmanas nowadays identify themselves as Sasvatis or Satasatis, which is a corruption of the word Satvati. Before the arrival of five kinds of Brahmanas from Kanyakubja There were many Satvata or Vaishnava Brahmanas in Bengal. Due to the strong influence of the atheistic philosophy of Buddhism, the spreading of the Vaishnava religion became more or less checked. And yet, despite facing various obstacles, the ancient religion is again being propagated extensively by the mercy of the Lord. So this here also is very interesting, that is taking it back to that point, that Satvata. So we're reviving something old. It's not just here, Lord Chaitanya, or just here. This is the original position. It means the spiritual world functions on that. That comes here as this this Aikayana system, and as literature is the Paramahamsa Samhita. Right? But then with time, then due to material consciousness, that becomes broken, has to be broken down into the Vedic. So then you get into the Vedic age. Does it make sense? Then with that comes all these different things. Right? So all we're doing is reviving that. That's why I said Lord Chaitanya, his golden age means it's like Satyayuga. Satyayuga, you're dealing with Hamsas. So here, then you could also take as another interpretation, or in light of this, where the verses that are said, the Puranas make the prophecy, that in the Kali Yuga, means during this golden age, then the devotees will be Ekavarna, right? So we could say, from the social point, Ekavarna, because we come from all different backgrounds and we mix up with everything like this, and so there isn't any specific varna, you can't figure it out anyway, right? That's one way you could say, the devotees don't really worry about that, you know? Does that make sense? But we can see here, there's actually a higher meaning meant, that Ekavarna means following the Ekayana path, is the Hamsas. There's only one varna, they're all devotees. Does that make sense? So that's a more hidden meaning that's thought out here. Okay, is that okay? So we'll end here. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jainitai Gaur Premanandi.